Welcome to Sap Chat. I'm your host, Jaron Main. Well, in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by David Lowson. David needs absolutely no introduction whatsoever, being a shining light in the SAP ecosystem, a regular speaker at Sapphire and other SAP events, and renowned as Capgemini's SAP Head of Global COE. David regularly posts profound articles on LinkedIn on the SAP market in the tech sector in general. So as we draw towards the end of the year, what better way to reflect on 2023 by drawing on David's 30 plus years of experience in the sector? So, David, welcome to SAP Chat. Delighted that you've made it here. Thank you for freeing up your time. Now, I wanted to start with you and where you started your career in SAP, because everyone knows you. You're a very visible person in the ecosystem, and we've always kind of known you as being Mr. SAP, if you like. But you started off life as a production engineer, is that right?
Yeah, I did a degree in production engineering. And I joined a large American company called Parker Hannifin, who make components of things like space shuttles and aero engines and cars. And I was a particularly appalling production engineer, not very accurate. And I did that for I had various roles. It was a good graduate training scheme. In fact, it was a good briefing for SAP, because you worked in procurement, you worked in sales, you worked in the warehouse, you worked in manufacturing, production scheduling, accounting, you did everything. And so it was very good. And then in 1991, I think, they selected JD Edwards as a product, and they said, do you want to go on the SAP project, on the JD Edwards project? And I said, yes. And we implemented it at the site I was working at. And then they said, do you want to stay doing that, or do you want to go back to being a production engineer? And I jumped at the chance. And then I actually applied for a job back in the day when we had newspapers that said JD Edwards. And I applied, and it turned out it was for SAP. And that was 1993-94. And I applied and explained my experience and got a job in SAP straight away. So that's how I got into it. And starting as a functional guy, and then a project management solution enterprise architect, which I don't think people call them then, and then that those days, then moving into a team one-to-one, made a load of friends there. We grew that very quickly, and then it was sold, and then carried on through Logica, who bought us, and then into Capgemini. So that's my story. Yeah.
And now you're running the global COE for SAP. So that's a much different, much broader kind of role.
Yeah, it is. And it probably doesn't feel that different. I mean, I've probably been this busy for a long time, and I've probably, but it's only when you stand back and you think about what you now know and what you've learned and where you've come from. And it's almost unimaginable, even the last 6-7 years, that I've learned that much. And, you know, I didn't have such a broad view then. It was very sort of centered on certain industries and certain countries, and now it's much broader and a wider view of the competitive situation with either other SAP SIs or other products. And that's really grown over the last few years. So it's amazing that, you know, 2006, 2007, 2008, I was mainly going into government in the UK and local authorities and things like that. And now I'm going into major consumer products companies and drug companies and pharma companies. And how did that happen is quite amazing. But I feel very privileged that I have more than 900 S4 programs going on. So I've got that many to talk to learn about. And then I also see the ones that we're not doing, and you're pretty well networked. And so pretty well unique in being able to see that everything. I can't say I'm an expert on anything apart from knowing a little bit about everything. Yeah.
Well, and as I said in the introduction, you are incredibly well known in the SAP ecosystem. I can't remember a Sapphire event where you weren't present or speaking in one way or another, and always pick up a big crowd. I think if I may, and we were chatting about this before we recorded, is to start off in an area where you and I actually picked up a conversation on LinkedIn. I think we were both contributing at one stage in terms of the the rise of rise, if you want, isn't that the right way of putting it, but kind of the focus on what's actually happening there, and also the issue that SAP seem to have got themselves into, which is the announcement around new innovations only being available on cloud platform. And I know you've got some pretty strong views, because in the market, I think on the LinkedIn comments thread we were picking up on, there was kind of a lot of very strong views that SAP were leaving a number of customers behind. But you've kind of got a kind of slightly different view on that.
Yeah, I do. And first of all, I largely work with large enterprise customers, so you know, probably the top 1,000 in the world. And I don't see the, and I think the message around RISE has changed in since it launched in 2021, where it was kind of like, what's this? To yes, we're going to go RISE and we're going to go accept it. And in those top 1,000 companies, and I accept there's 40,000 in the world, and you know, there might be smaller ones that really feel. You know, they don't like the concept or haven't got their heads around it yet. But I see in the larger ones, by and large, especially since the announcements at the end of the summer, with the AI and the sustainability stuff only being available with it, that people are starting to really get it. So, you know, my view is that for SAP to be successful, it has to have a strong financial performance and a strong valuation. And I think the way to get that is to be seen as a SaaS and a cloud company. And that will allow them to invest and grow and do more stuff that people want to buy. And to do that, they really do have to move. And, you know, a valuation on a cloud company is higher than that of an on-premise company. And I think that drives the share price and keeps everybody in a job and keeps them with the budgets available to invest. And I think that move is kind of inevitable. And I fully support that. And I think that the idea that that you're going to continue enhancing the on-premise product for years and years and years. I mean, sometime they had to bite the bullet and it was going to be a bit difficult. You could argue they should have done it longer ago. And, yep. You know, with the new leadership has changed that, but maybe they should have done it. Probably the problem is actually they didn't start early enough and it becomes a bit of a shock. I think that most of the innovation is going to be in the cloud. And I think that it's the way to go. You know, if you've got this idea about a clean core, if you've got this idea about continuous delivery of new functions, new things, keeping up to date, then the only way to do it is through the cloud. And that means that it's inevitable, and the transition probably makes a few people feel uncomfortable. I think you've also got to look at a lot of the people who are buying SAP who are not in the first flush of youth, as you and me aren't, and the next generation has been. When I was, one of my roles with my current employer was running packages, which included Salesforce and Oracle and all these things. And I learned a lot about the cloud economy then and learned how powerful it was and how they just took it as normal. And I thought, you know, and I just think that world is coming to the SAP world. And I think we may as well get over it and push on, because if it doesn't, then SAP's performance will weaken, it won't invest, and it will become too static, and we want it to keep moving forward. So I really think there's nothing to be scared of. You've clearly got to get the right mix in the cloud. You've got to make sure it's good value. You've got to make sure you've got the FinOps in place and things like that. But in the end, I think in 5 or 6 years' time, we will be saying, what release of RISE are you on, and what are you taking next, and what cloud product are you taking next? And this is just a transition, I'm afraid, and I think we should get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, my only comment to all of that would be those customers, those lighthouse customers that perhaps SAP would talk to maybe 2 or 3 years ago that adopted S/4HANA early, that are now in a position whereby they've kind of, you could arguably say, they did the right thing, they followed SAP's advice, they were held up as a shining beacon by SAP, but actually now they find themselves in a position where if they wanted something like Green Ledger, they're not on RISE, they're going to have to make some arrangement to do that, and how SAP would help them. I think that's probably maybe the messaging could have been better handled by SAP.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that there's a small group of people who moved to the cloud on maybe on a hyperscaler, who went to S4, who did lots of nice things, and now are having to move to RISE. But I think it's beholden on the the ecosystem, the partners, SAP itself and the hyperscalers to support them through that and to make sure there's a good commercial model in place. And as far as I can see, SAP will help, the hyperscalers will help, but the partners will help. You know, an interesting perspective is if you're not on RISE and you've got a strong SAP team and things like that, they're going to want to be on it, and you know, keeping your team and stuff like that will be harder if you're not on RISE. So there are a subset of people who did the early thing, as you say, did the right thing, but are now having to move again. It's unfortunate, but if they've kept the core clean, then that move should be relatively trivial and should be fairly easy to do, and you will find support, both financial in terms of having done it before as well, in the market. So you're right.
So you've mentioned it a couple of times, and the notion of a clean core, and I think again in that conversation that you and I were involved in, we were talking then about clean core, and you made the point, which was quite profound but absolutely spot on, which was but Geraint, the notion of a clean core didn't exist 2 years ago. And so I'm interested to see where you see that whole evolution of clean core going. Because for my money, at its purest form, you can never absolutely get a clean core, because every customer has to have some form of customization to be unique.
Yep.
And therefore, if everyone was perfectly the same, then there would be no differentiation. But how have you seen customers kind of looking at the notion of clean core and then move towards that kind of nirvana, if we want to call it nirvana?
Well, don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean the end of innovation, differentiation, or anything. It means that you just put it in the right place. And, you look at a typical SAP system that's been in place for, a few years now. And it's a bit messed up in terms of people who bespoke to. You'll have, if you say 100% is the total number of adaptations and extensions people have done, immediately 50% will be not being used or totally pointless. So you'll get that down. You'll get rid of 50% of it straight away. You'll then get a layer of things like the interfaces, which will be done differently. You'll use a more API-based transaction-driven approach to the interfaces, which will sort things out a lot. You'll then report. I mean, you'll be reporting. S4 is so powerful around reporting. Why are you doing that? And then you get standard application extensions, user exits and things like that, which were always there and should be there, and you'll get down to them. So you end up with a smaller number of really nutty problems that you've got to work your way through. And, some of those you'll be able to use using a SaaS product or by building something new. Some of those you'll make a major change to the business. Some of them, there's some famous things like catch weight, things like that. And then there's other things that have always been problems, like the tax regimes in different countries. You don't need to change the core to do that. They can all be done outside. So, and then there'll be a few things which SAP say will be coming in the next release, which maybe you will develop in Tide and then get the next release. So you should be able to get it down to a very small number of very key decisions where you might need to change things, and you have a decision, and that's it. But the other side of this is all the it doesn't mean the end of personalization, innovation. I mean, in-app extensions are incredibly powerful. Stuff like if you want to do something different in a different place or a different factory, and you want a different UI, you can do it. It's just not done in the core. It's done outside in the PaaS and the SaaS. And I actually think if you've got the right architecture, it's not the end of innovation and stuff. It's actually an increase in it and personalization, and it also happening quicker because you haven't got all to do that testing to go back and retest everything again. So you actually probably will get more innovation, more changes, more personalization, and it will arrive quicker. It's not the end of it. It's just where you put it. And, we've got a nice architecture that says you do it in the core, you do it close to the core, you do it away from the core, and what products you do it. And you can work it out automatically. And we're getting spectacular results with it. Not just in terms of reducing the amount of bespoke stuff that's in there, but also the speed and agility that you're providing. So your rollouts are getting half quicker than they were before, upgrades are becoming trivial, engagement with the business is going up, the volume of data you've got in your system is coming down, the cost of support or the increased value is going up. So there actually, in my view, is a business case from going to the Clean Core on its own without actually changing your business very much.
And picking up on that, is the rise of BTP as well alongside that? I mean, we've seen it grow as a as an offering. We've seen, I was speaking to Vivian Bosch a couple of weeks ago, my last episode, where we talked about taking custom code, custom development out of the core, putting it onto BTP as a solution. How are you seeing BTP grow? Because it is seeing significant growth with SAP, isn't it?
Yeah, my SAP business is growing very nicely, and BTP is growing about twice as fast and has been doing for 3 years now, and I expect it to continue. I mean, the other platform PaaS providers are available, and I don't ever see BTP as being 100% of everything you do. I see it as in a hybrid world, and I see the hyperscalers and SaaS providers and other platform providers and SAP fighting it out for 20 years. You know, I don't think anyone that will ever own that layer entirely. I think it'll always be where the innovation happens and where the new stuff happens. But SAP are doing very well at grabbing more and more of it. And, you know, things like the integration hub and things like that seem to be standard now. And they weren't before. The SAC and SAC planning seem to be standard, and they weren't before. You know, the low code stuff they've got seems to be start being used every more and more. So, you know, each service is a fight. SAP have to win. They have to have the best price, the best content, the best engineered product. But one by one, they're winning. You know, they'll never win it all, because somebody will always invent something new they have to fight for, but they'll get more and more of it. And we're also seeing, you know, for the first time, it always used to be, well, we'll consider using a bit of BTP or a bit of an SAP. Now people are saying, why not use BTP, which is sort of turning the whole thing on its head.
So
I look forward to it. And I think the competition in that space will drive the new stuff and the innovation and the magic and the price and the models and the content. So I welcome it. I think you change your ERP every 20 or 30 years. You might change your SaaS products every 5 years. Your PaaS is just a fight. And you'll continue fighting in that space. I mean, if the pricing gets too much, you'll change it. Even my own systems, where I've got 150 demo systems or something like that, we have a hybrid because some things are available and work, or we get given it at a very good price and we use it, and we have two of everything or three of everything, and that's the way it is, but within an architectural framework which allows everything to interoperate and work really nicely together, and we've got used to it.
On that point, as SI providers, do you see then the conversation going and focusing much more around orchestration of support of all of those microservices and how that fits together?
I see it as providing an architectural framework in which to do it. I think it's very important that you get your support right to make sure that you keep maintaining it in little DevOps teams and things like that. I think we have to have new contractual models that are based far more on outcomes. It throws up loads and loads of extra questions. So if you've got a service that you've built outside, say, supply and chain planning enhancements or something like that, you've got a team supporting that. Well, that team is also supporting fixes. It's supporting rollouts. It's supporting enhancements at the same time. So instead of the old model where you had a project team and a support team, that's all changed. And they're an integrated team that looks after it and makes sure nothing goes wrong across all the things it's being used for, and it works with the other teams as well. And you have to have nice standards in place and common frameworks and contracts and handoffs and a backlog and all those sort of stuff, and in automated testing, all that stuff has to be in place. So there's a complete change, but the upside, as you said, the word nirvana earlier, is fantastic, because you can get to a place where you're constantly releasing, constantly up to weekly releases is enough, I guess, constantly engaging with the business. They're coming to you with new ideas. You're providing it. I mean, we built a wall around SAP over many years. We put loads of industrialization. We put loads of admin. I don't actually think SAP lost market share to the quality of the product. I think it lost it to the fact that the SAP community was so difficult to use with, to work with. And, you know, somebody would come along and say, I'd like to try something. And we'd go, oh, write a functional spec. Could you provide us a proper business case? Meanwhile, somebody using other technology would just go and build it. And I think we came too hard to work with. We've got to change that. And that's all part of this journey as well, which I'm very excited about and interested in.
Yeah, I was speaking to a few of my my network in SAP, and I think a lot of us felt going through the kind of 2010s that you wonder where SAP was going a little bit. It was kind of, well, it feels a little bit old hat. It is moving, but is it moving fast enough? And now suddenly one could argue that we're in the last quarter of our careers, let's be polite, that actually suddenly it's really taking off, and it's a really exciting place to be. And it feels to me very much like the early 90s and mid 90s again.
I think in terms of the volume work, it certainly does feel like the growth. It feels like that. I mean, we know what we're doing. Well, before we didn't know what we're doing, which is a huge change. So, you know, the surety around delivery, we're not going to write a huge bespoke system in SAP ABAP, which is the sort of thing I did in 1994 and five and now regret. And I'm sorry to the customers I did that with. It is exciting. And I think we will see people returning to, as long as you get the engagement of the business right, I think you'll see stuff returning to SAP. So I think things like the planning product, which might have gone to another one, or some of the people have gone Coupa, will be coming back, because the SAP integration will be there, the content will be there, the tools to join it all together, and the value will be there. And so I think we'll see people, as long as we do it right, I think we'll see people returning more of their footprint to SAP. And we've seen a drift away in certain industries when SAP didn't really have an answer. I think that's going to happen. It's going to come back. And if we get this model right, then I think every time you change your business, and clearly business changes a lot faster than it used to, you will change your SAP system to meet that requirement. And, you know, we saw that through COVID and disruption we've had recently, that if you've got that set up right, you will be able to change it very fast, and you'll use it more, and you'll do more interesting stuff. Mm. And the careers of the people supporting it, you know, not me, but, you know, my next generation down, will be more interesting, because they'll be delivering value, not just sitting there going, oh, we certainly can't do that, that's too difficult, oh, we'd have to ask all these people about that and get it signed off. It will change, it'll be more interesting. And back to when I was working in other areas with other products, I think I went to see an unknown product, but not famous for doing plant maintenance, and they delivered a plant maintenance solution. And I just went, how? You haven't got all this? And they said, well, we've just built some stuff and added, and it works. And the customer absolutely loved it. And they'd done it in 3 months to get a pilot live. And if you'd come along and said to them, do this around SAP, we'd have said functional spec, testing, integration testing, all this kind of stuff, waterfall. And 12 months later, we might have had something live, which might have been very integrated, but would have not, you know, in the interim, they had something that worked, and the customers were much happier, and that had taken 3 months, not 12 months. We've got to change that way.
Yeah, completely. And picking up on a point you made earlier, I do equally wince when I talk to my customers about a clean core and getting rid of customizations, because I was one of those consultants in the mid-90s saying, oh, you know, do whatever you want. You can customize it to be exactly like you want it to. And I think, oh, I'm that same consultant walking through the doors. And I said, no, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
I think I've always had a tendency not to do it. And I think that was coming from J.D. Edwards, where you had no choice but to stick to standards.
Right. Okay.
So I wasn't of the SAP R2 heritage, which was everything you build. So I think I came from it from a slightly different place, because in J.D. Edwards, you had a very limited number of choices, and that probably helped me. And sort of also, I think my personality is relatively persuasive, so I could normally get people to stick with the standard solution. I certainly have never seen it as an industry where if we get a change control to build something and we get lots of money, it's a really good thing to do. I've never seen that as being a great idea. But I still have got some blood on my hands from that time, I'm sure. Some of the things I've seen now. I mean, nobody even understands why they've got it, what they did it for. Mm. And it reflects a time where, you know, you think about SAP going into the 90s and early 2000s, it, by and large, we used to ship large boxes of things to other people who bought large boxes of things. The internet wasn't available. Things moved around on boats. You had faxes. And the world's not like that anymore. So it wasn't built to do that kind of thing. And stuff like tax-efficient supply chains and agility and new batches of one and configurable products and servitization, they were just not. They were things that weren't possible. They are possible now if you get this right. And far beyond that into new models that we can't even dream of in terms of business. So really, everybody says business is three times faster than it was 10 years ago. It certainly wasn't as global when I was putting in SAP. Really, we have to change the way we're doing it. And I also feel that a lot of the managers and really senior bosses in organizations who saw the who've seen SAP as something a bit awkward to deal with and something that holds back the business, there's a lot of people you've got to change their point of view. So you've got to do it differently. They'll say, why will this be different? You have to explain why. Mm.
Absolutely. So going from the early 90s right up to date then, I want to talk to you about AI, because it seems to be that this year, it doesn't matter whether it's the press or social media or customers, conversations are always talking about AI, and SAP have a notion of it, an intelligent enterprise. And do you really think we're starting to see the start of, you know, AI, mass adoption, and the intelligent enterprise?
Well, we're back to the cycle of industry excitement and the reality. And, you know, I've been through a number of waves of excitement over the years.
The Gartner calls it the hype cycle, don't they?
Yeah. So, you know, if you look back to, you know, 1999, everybody was joining marketplace companies. Well, yeah, now there's some fantastic marketplaces, but half the ones that were started didn't really take off, you know. I followed the entire blockchain thing with some interest and could never quite work out why we'd be using it, you know, in all cases in SAP. I could see in some cases. It's a bit slightly different with the AI one, because the AI thing, we were putting into our solutions for several years. We had a lot of, RPA and AI being used in our finance, HR, procurement processes as standard. And we had 250 or 300 pre-built stuff done to handle the sort of volumes that you get in shared service centers and recruitment and things like that. We had it all done. And then suddenly this year it's kind of become far more prominent, and a lot of that's reflected in things like share price and stuff like that. So it was already there and it was already being used, and we have a portal of demonstration cases where we had lots of AI built in and we were using it. What I do see is that, you know, there's some very clever stuff. I've got some really good examples. So we've got a retailer we work with who uses it to predict what they're going to sell. They get it right. They get the production right, and they produce their scrap, and they get their stock in the right place at the right time, ready for it. And that's using, you know, they just analyze stuff and it comes up and say, make so many of these, and they sell them, and it's fantastic. But we were doing that before all the hype came along. What I see happening now is the new business models have much higher volumes. So you're selling smaller batches, you're selling one, mixing things together and shipping it, you're directly injecting drugs, you're managing thousands of wind turbines rather than one great big power station, or you've got lots and lots of cars with some energy on board. You've got the servitization stuff where you're getting people driving around in cars and you need to know the condition of the car, what it's doing, how the tires are, how many fines you've got for speeding, all that stuff. And just that sheer volume of data and the insight that you can gain from it just wasn't something that was around back in the days when we were sitting shipping container loads of finished product from one place to another. So I think the use cases for AI, if we're going to do these new digital models, AI and Gen AI is really important for it. Otherwise, you're going to fail. Customer service will go down, and you'll make the wrong things, deliver the wrong things. We've seen that with the way that customers are behaving You know, it's a simple thing like cars. You know, you used to just buy cars from stock. Now you specify them online. And people buy crazy stuff because they've seen certain things on TV or there's a particular fashion and color or whatever it is. And that causes problems in supply chain. So Gen AI can predict that coming and you can make the right thing rather than making the wrong thing. And, you know, these are really good use cases, just getting closer to the consumers, predicting what they're going to do, or all the hundreds of pieces of equipment to work out what they're going to do and how they're going to perform. And you just couldn't mash all that stuff through unless you had Gen AI. So I'm less hyped about it. I kind of expect it to work, but it's going to have enormous benefits. I don't think you could have done the sheer volume of these new digital processes without it. Yeah. That's what I think. But I just kind of thought it worked. I didn't really get too exercised about it.
No, I do think there's some of this is the press maybe picking up on things, and also ChatGPT obviously being used more by the general population. And I'm surprised just how much that is used. Even my kids at uni seem to revert to it. You know, not to actually create a dissertation or to do anything, but to give them a really good understanding of, well, where's the starting point, you know?
It's good for things like speeches at weddings and stuff like that. If you want to make a few speeches and a few jokes, it's very good for that. you know, I've seen CVs that have been done with it and things like that. And I forgot to really mention in my previous bit about what it will mean to the implementation of SAP. And, you know, we've already got code being taken out of old ways and remediated to the new ways of BTP and things like that being done, and just a checking, and we're getting 90% of it right. We've got documentation being generated, we've got S scripts being generated, we've got trouble tickets being resolved, we've got all sorts of stuff using Gen AI in the process of supporting SAP and implementing SAP. And I think that is going to reduce the time it takes, the number of days it takes. I don't think it gets rid of the sort of high-end quality resources. But the idea is you say, I would like a report that does this, and it gets written. That's true. Now, you have to be knowledgeable to say, this is the report you want. So I think it's going to have an effect on some of the industrialized delivery centers and what they're doing. And I think it's going to change. So I think it's going to drive more and more quality in people that are being used to implement SAP rather than more of a commodity feel. And I think people have to start thinking about that. I'm looking forward to the day, it's already happening, where we see the estimates going down and down and down in terms of days. But I still think you'll need a very high quality program manager, you'll still need high quality solution leads, you'll still need solution architects to understand those big problems. But if overnight everything is written and prepared, and the idea that configuration can be done automatically, it can be. I'm not too exercised about that, because really the actual configuration of SAP doesn't take very long. It's the thinking and the arguing that takes all the time. So I don't think it will get rid of the thinking and the arguing. It might come up with some good ideas, but you know, I still think you'll need to debate it.
No, from my experience as a FICO consultant years ago, it wasn't ever the amount of time it took to configure SAP. It might have been the fact that, going back to your point, we were doing it in the 90s where we didn't have the internet. So we were on mobile phones, which were relatively new, phoning other consultants saying, can you tell me where I'll find this particular radio button? But it was actually just trying to convey the impact and the options. And then also just trying to get clients to understand what their process was and what they wanted it to be. So there was a lot of discussions taking place and a lot of ruminating.
Yeah, but the first SAP project I ever did on R3, which was of a large scale, it was a huge business change. They'd not really done invoicing before. It was a public sector organisation that was being privatised. They'd not done things like drop shipping. The program took a year. We spent all our time discussing what drop shipping meant and how the invoicing processes work and things like that. And then about a week before go live, someone trashed the live system. We had to type it all back in again. And you know what? It took us 2 days and we did it. So the typing in is not very difficult. You got the programs ready for data loading and things like that. There was a bit of panic, clearly, and a bit of hard work. But, the previous 50 weeks have been the hard bit. The final 2 weeks of typing it back in again really wasn't a big issue. It was fine. So it's not typing it in that's difficult, it's the debating, and that will still remain. But if you've made your life out of writing test scripts, I'd worry.
So, David, what I'd like to do as we come to an end is to just ask you, because I've read in the last few years you've popped up on LinkedIn and other various sources making your predictions for the year ahead, and I'd really like to get a feel for what you predict for SAP in 2024. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think are going to be the hot topics?
I'm writing this down to make sure I cover the things on. So, I think the first thing, and I'm going to use the wrong phrase, I think the world of SAP S4 migration implementation is moving down the bus. I think that means that a few years ago in the largest ones, we were doing roadmaps and business cases and planning. And now we're actually moving into delivery, pilots, rollout, industrialized delivery. And I think the focus is going to shift in terms of the skills that are in the market. So beginning of the year, I did a count up of the top customers over 10 billion and worked out how many of them had started S4, and about 30% hadn't. And at the end of the year, even though none have moved away from S4, I would say now we're up to about 95% have started, have got an idea. So naturally, there'll be less business cases and roadmaps and far more actually doing, and they're getting to the pilot stage. So I think that's skills going to be different, more industrialized delivery, more factory. And as we talked about, the merging of the continuous delivery, less trouble tickets and projects, but more of emerging. I think that's going to be a big trend that's going on. I think the clean core thing is going to be proved to be a good idea, because I find that, you know, you used to deploy SAP into a vacuum. So you put it into a factory that didn't have very much and everybody went, that's good. Now you're deploying into a complex environment with lots of interfaces and lots of, it's far more complicated. So the idea that you have a clean core, which you don't have to do too much regression testing and just adapt it for the next site is going to be very interesting. I will throw in two things which I say every year and sort of kind of get wrong. So Brim is coming, because I think all these new nice digital models are using Brim, and we're seeing a lot more Brim. That has come true. And then I'll go CX. I think the SAP CX product is very good. And if you're actually going to integrate for a complex process instead of having an interface to Salesforce or something like that, then I think CX has a way forward. If you make something complicated or ship something complicated where you want to know it. So that's sort of my outline prediction is that CX will go. I'm very exercised by event-driven architectures and products like Solus. The idea that you can send a purchase order from one place, an old ECC system, translate it and put it into a new S4 system, and then next take a purchase order from somewhere else and do that. I think that's going to be a good way of managing all the interim states and everything like that. So I like the idea of that a lot. And I think that's going to develop in the very complicated ones, because I think a lot of the programs that are starting to roll out are finding this is really hard, not because SAP doesn't work, just because unpicking it things and putting it back in is really difficult. So I think that's got a really great future. I think that's really good. A little while ago, there was Signavio Celonis. Well, Signavio seems to be winning that fight. LeanIX, the latest acquisition, I think is going to become part of the way we do it. I think a hybrid cloud in the PaaS side of things is going to be where everybody's at and everybody gets used to that world. I think SAP, as they move to RISE, are going to have use of the fact they're going to start reletting the contracts that were let in 2021 in 2024, probably the first ones are going to. So it's going to be about adoption and use rather than just selling licenses, which will be, you know, a change to the way everybody thinks about it. I think that's going to be a big thing. I think RISE will continue to rise. The percentage of RISE in my projects and pipeline is unimaginably higher than it was 2 years ago and a year ago and even the beginning of the year. So I think RISE is going to continue. In the long run, I think public cloud will come in, and I think that we're going to see far more components from SAP being public cloud and perhaps a hybrid where you have your finance on public cloud and the rest on not. In terms of the market, there's going to be a strong demand for skills all the way through 2024, 2025. I know maybe there's been a bit of a slowdown this year, but that's still involved growth. So it's hard to know, you know, has it slowed down or not? It's certainly grown a lot, but you know, could it have grown more if it hadn't been a slowdown? Probably decisions being delayed. I think we're going to continue to see growth through 24, 25 for sure. And I suspect 26, though the type of delivery is going to change. My previous comment about roadmaps, maybe the big four will either have to start doing more project delivery, fixed price, or they're going to struggle to find the roadmap work, or they're going to have to do business integration. I think big full service SIs will continue to find a lot of work. Interestingly, we'll see where the pure plays go, whether they sort of fit in behind the big SIs and the big four and try and get in there, or whether they start winning these industrialized delivery on their own right, as they did in the sort of early 2000s. But the price differential is not as great because the big SIs don't have their own offshore capability. Yeah, I see a bright future for SAP. My dream is that SAP starts to take stuff back that it's lost over the years to, you know, Workday, Salesforce and people like that. And people start using it more. Certainly the indications I see about the growth and the success in the market would indicate that it's going pretty well in comparison to everybody else. So, you know, finally, I really want to make SAP continuous delivery a thing, which means that people use it a lot, and every time they change their business or reinvent themselves, they use SAP for doing that. And that is my sort of hope for the 10 years time, that every, you know, because there clearly is a boom in SAP at the moment. I want that to continue, which means it's got to be really at the heart of people's digital transformations. So every time they change their business, they change their SAP system. And for a few years now, we've had sort of like they change their business outside of the SAP system. And the SAP system is this slightly annoying static thing in the middle that everybody moans about. Mm. So I want that to change. I'm excited about it, actually. Yeah. Cool.
Well, David, thank you so much for your time. You've been very generous in freeing it up. I know you're really busy. We're recording this just sort of a week before Christmas, so it's very apt that we're looking towards 2024, which is just around the corner. So, David, thank you for your time. It's a real pleasure. And maybe this time next year we can look at your predictions and scorecard them.
Laugh at me, yeah, for what I got wrong.
No, not at all. I think actually a lot of them will be quite close to the mark.
I hope so. I think for anybody young, get into SAP, start using it, start understanding it, and to a certain extent, convince the, as you said, people in the last quarter of their careers that they've been doing it wrong and change it. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah, keep us on your toes. David,
it's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.